This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
And good morning, everyone. Today is Sunday, May 15th, 2011. I'm Doug Kelly. I'm so glad you could join me today. Today we're going to be talking about a couple of different things. I'm going to be talking about honoring the divine energy in all things, coming up just very shortly. And then we have a guest with us today, Reverend Vicki Hunter. We'll be talking about children with psychic gifts, what parents can do, a very relevant topic for children, especially gifted children that way. Empower the Spirit is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science as part of our regular church services. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit. We do that in a number of ways, with practical life skills, focus there. It's a program about enhancing the human condition both spiritually and physically. And so glad you could join us today. If you are joining this live program, you're more than welcome to post any questions in the chat room, and we will try to answer those as we go through the program. Today, my topic is honoring the divine energy in all things. And this is really a bit of a review of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science principle of belief number 5, and I'll just read that principle. It reads, rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. And so let's talk about that energy and how it is in everything. If you look out, in fact, just give you an example this morning here in Florida, you know, beautiful morning, gentle breeze, birds are chirping, you know, singing, squirrels are scurrying about, you know, just there's life, there's energy in the morning, the sun is shining. You know, the temperature is warm, there's energy there. I mean, it's a beautiful morning. And if you just stop for a moment and look at it, there's energy there. Energy in all these different living things. And it makes sense that we all have this energy because we all come from the same place, you know, star material. And it's the closest thing to divine that we have. You're no doubt aware of Einstein's famous equation E is equal to mc squared, also known as the special theory of relativity, but it describes the relationship between energy and matter and shows that they're essentially interchangeable. So all the matter that you see has got energy to it. And so I want to talk about how we can honor this divine energy in all things. And I'm going to talk about a little bit about nature and earth. We're going to talk about animals, people, and even yourself. Beginning with nature and the earth, this is really a simple concept. How do we honor nature, honor the earth? Well, easy, you know, by taking care of it, by recycling, not polluting, by picking up after ourselves, cleaning up our messes, basically just taking care of the earth. One of the things that I had mentioned in the brochure or the information on the website for this program is talking about how everything is connected to everything else, and that is absolutely true. And I had talked about giving some evidence for that. What I've decided to do is make an executive decision here, and I'm going to postpone that remarkable evidence until next week's program, where I talk about principle of belief number 6, and we're going to talk about entanglement and connectedness, and it's going to be non-locality of the mind and consciousness, and it just fits much better. But it's remarkable, so I hope you'll tune in next week, and we'll talk about how even the plants and vegetation are connected to the universal consciousness. So we honor nature and the earth by taking care of it. Again, not a very difficult concept, very easy to grasp. Well, what about animals? How do we honor the energy in animals? Well, we do that in a variety of ways. Most importantly, by treating them properly, not abusing animals. You know, many people have such a soft heart with animals, and that's a good thing. That's a way of honoring animals. They will adopt animals at shelter. If a stray shows up, they'll take the stray in, take care of it. They get their pets spayed, neutered, so that there's not, you know, a roller coaster or runaway effect of babies. Many people have their own way of honoring animals and the energy that is in within animals. One man I know of, he goes here in the local area, he goes behind a McDonald's about every day. There's some kitties that live there, some cats, kittens, and he feeds them. He gives them food. That's his way of honoring animal life. There's so many ways we can do that just by taking care of them, protecting habitats, making sure that human encroachment in their area doesn't harm them. And, of course, that kind of goes back into nature, too, you know, not depleting the planet of its natural resources, not destroying the rainforest. I mean, you know, I could get on that soapbox, but I won't. There's so many ways we can honor the energy in nature, the energy in animals. Animals are a beautiful thing. They bring a lot of pleasure, and they're fascinating to just be around. How about people? How do we honor the divine energy in others? And this is going to be one of those areas that can probably be the most apropos. It's going to be the most applicable to our everyday life. There are numerous ways we can honor other people, numerous ways. And these ways, I know you've heard of them before. I know you've heard this stuff before. And this is the important factor. While these concepts may be simple, the big question is, are we applying them in our everyday life? And the answer, generally speaking, is probably not, at least not to the extent we should be. So let's talk about how we can honor other people. One way is by being courteous and thoughtful. I mean, just look in your own life experience. How many people just seem to go on and on without even thinking, without even being aware of what they're doing? You know, and people can be unthoughtful. They can be discourteous. Not that they intend to be that way, but they can be. Another way that we can honor others is by not being aggressive, you know, not being abusive. And that can be in our speech, in our actions. It can be in our attitude toward them. Don't be aggressive. Don't be abusive. Another way is doing the right thing and doing the kind thing. And there can be a difference between doing the right thing and doing the kind thing. I'll give you an example. Maybe you come across somebody on the street who's homeless, who's begging or asking for money. And often the people who do that can have addictions. They basically are homeless because they're addicts, and any money they get goes to support their habit. That doesn't describe every homeless person, of course, but it does describe many. So by giving this person money, we are essentially enabling that person to continue in their habit, in their bad habit, and we're basically assisting them to shirk personal responsibility. But you know what? There's sometimes we got to listen to our heart. Sometimes we need to do the kind thing instead of the right thing, because the right thing in that case would be not to give them money. But sometimes we need to listen to our heart, and we need to do the kind thing. That's just one example. Somebody you know, you live with, you work with, they're having a hard time, they've maybe mistreated you, and they want something now, and perhaps the right thing is to just not do anything, not help them, because they frankly don't deserve it. But listen to your heart. Maybe doing the kind thing is what's in order. How about smiling and being personable? So many folks in our day and age are just not personable. They're not down to earth. They're distant. This is no more evident than in emails and in technology. Be personable in your emails. You know, be a real live human being. Be who you are. Understand that you're communicating with other real live human beings. It's not just some machine. We're people, so treat people like people. Be personable. Do no harm. Here's another big one that I'll offer. How about offering a kind and encouraging word to people? Kind of as a matter of fact, as a matter of practice, I should say. You know, people are so depleted these days. I mean, look at the economy. It's been tough. A lot of folks have lost their jobs or have been downsized or have lost income, and they're discouraged, they're depleted, and maybe you are. I know it's been tough. why not focus on giving the good word, being encouraging? You can do that with a cheerful good morning, how are you, or in the way you word things. If you see somebody could use some encouragement, give them that encouraging word. You know, I can't stress that one enough. People need encouragement. People sorely need it. They're so depleted. Another way that we can honor the divine energy in others is to enthusiastically support them, those who need it. Maybe somebody has had a nice win. Maybe somebody has gotten something or attained something or achieved something that we would like. How do we approach that? Are we jealous? Or do we celebrate with them in their success? That's another way of honoring the divine energy in them and honoring them as people. Another way is to give the benefit of the doubt. Not assume that somebody has done something to us or whatever, or has improper motives in what they're doing, but give them the benefit of the doubt. One of my rules of thumb in dealing with people, especially people I don't know, is I will give you the benefit of the doubt until you give me a reason not to. You know, if somebody, this could even go into the business world, if an employee tells me something, I think they may have done something, they deny it, I will believe them. I will take them at their word until I have no reason to do so. And that's just a good way of honoring people, giving the benefit of the doubt. Have empathy for people, knowing that everybody is, by and large, trying to do their very best with the knowledge, the experience, the abilities they have at the moment. You know, people don't lay awake at night scheming as to how they can hurt somebody or screw another person. You know, they're just trying their best. And part of the issue is that they lack awareness. I guess I could say that of all of us, couldn't I? I mean, we all lack awareness. We all have relative levels of awareness. And that's the point of listening to programs like this and furthering your own education, is to increase that awareness. Your awareness not only of yourself, but also of the world, the earth, the animals, other people, the universe, the cosmos, all of it. We want to gain an awareness. There are numerous ways to honor others, and I would like to offer a challenge to you. Spend the next 7 days looking for ways in which you can honor those around you, those that you come in contact with. It can be in any kind of way, whether it's holding the door for someone, giving a helping hand when somebody needs it, or again, saying a cheerful good morning, or how you doing, it's good to see you. Those kinds of things, but meaning it, meaning being sincere with it. That's how you can honor other people. And again, simple concept, sure. Have you heard them before? I'm sure you have. To what degree are you applying these concepts? Do right. Do no harm. There's one other area that I want to talk about, honoring the divine energy, and that's with you, with yourself. How much do you honor yourself? You also need to honor yourself, that divine energy within you. You have to. Otherwise, you're not going to attain the success or those things which you want. Some ways that you can honor yourself, lose the guilt. I'm going to say something. I don't want you to ever forget these words. Listen carefully. There is no value in guilt. Period. It is a pointless, worthless emotion. When we feel guilty about ourselves or shameful about ourselves, we're denigrating ourselves, and it gets us nowhere. It depletes us. It takes resources. It robs us of emotional resources. Lose the guilt. We all make mistakes. That's a given. We all make our mistakes. Fine. That's human nature. That's just inherent to who we are. Make your mistakes. But don't feel guilt over them, because you cannot be anything different than whom you are. You can't ask a tiger to change its stripes, because that's who it is. We as human beings make mistakes. So when you make a mistake, learn the lesson. Make amends if possible. Move forward more experienced, more knowledgeable, and guilt-free. Another way you can honor the divine energy in yourself is to stop trying to please everyone. You got to please yourself first and foremost, and I'm not talking about in an egotistical or narcissistic type of way. I simply mean that you have to honor yourself first if you're going to honor anyone else. If you don't love yourself, how can you love anyone else? If you don't honor yourself, how can you honor anyone else? If you don't respect yourself, how can you respect anyone else? So respect yourself, honor yourself. Understand that you deserve all the good things in life just like anyone else. No more, no less. You are deserving. Stop taking yourself so seriously. We all tend to do that at times, and that just leads to us being hard on ourselves. Don't be so hard on yourselves. I mean, if you're going to give anybody a break, give yourself a break. But learn the lessons. Don't use it as an excuse. Learn the lessons and be kind to yourself. Be human. You are human. Be a real live human being and accept yourself as a human being. Above all, do no harm and do right. Do good. You know, we're all we got. Metaphysical humanistic science will not teach you that you must become one with God because, in essence, you already are God. You have divine energy. You're connected to everything else and everyone else because you are literally made of the same stuff as me or anyone else. Metaphysical humanistic science will not teach you that you need to have unhealthy self-sacrifice, privation, or that you need to engage in some kind of self-denigration, that all of this is somehow preferable as a way of life. You know, living a full and meaningful life is much more preferable. You know, metaphysical humanistic science will teach you to do right, and sometimes that does involve a measure of self-sacrifice, for sure. But privation or doing without and self-denigration are never healthy. They never get you anywhere. Metaphysical humanistic science is about exploring and enhancing the human condition. It's about empowering the human spirit. It's about honoring the divine that exists in all of us. It's time for greater awareness of life and existence and consciousness. It's time for these to take hold on this planet, folks. It's time for us to stop fighting each other and start realizing that we're it. We are connected. When we harm somebody else, we harm ourselves. Why would we ever want to do that? Unlike most religious dogmas that practice codependence on some mythical supernatural being in the sky, metaphysical humanistic science teaches healthy self-dependence. That's hugely important. It's about self-completeness. It's about self-actualization. It's time that we stop looking outside of ourselves for those answers to solve our problems. And this is why we don't teach about a mythical God concept that only serves to denigrate the individual by teaching them to depend on someone else, and I might even say codepend on someone else. This translates into the idea that you're not enough. You're not good enough. This is only exacerbated by religions that teach that you are sinful and in need of forgiveness. Well, you know, that's not true. It's baloney. There is no such thing as sin. We are human beings. We do make mistakes. And we are supposed to learn from those mistakes and gradually get better. Work toward self-completeness. Work toward being who you are. And is it any wonder that religion has been the source of most of the world's conflicts throughout history? You know, teach people to stand on their own two feet. And that's what you must do. Self-dependence. Learn your lessons. Evolve. Grow every day. Honor other people. Honor others. And if any of what I've just said here is rather shocking, then that's your cue to really think about it. I'm certainly not the first one to bring these points out. Not at all. Many, many have come before me and will come after me. But it is true. And I've been there, done that with the big religions. You have to look to yourself. You have the answers. So I want you to focus, if you will, on your truth. What's your truth? You know, the interesting thing about religion, for every devout Christian, there's a devout Muslim. For every devout Muslim, there's a devout Hindu. For every devout Hindu, there's a devout Buddhist. And then it goes on and on and on. Well, and every one of these absolutely believe they have the, quote, truth. So if you feel that you have the truth, know that there's somebody out there, many people out there, who are just as convinced. So it's really not about getting the truth. It's really about getting your truth. What makes sense to you? What resonates with you? Find that. And as you do, honor the divine energy that exists in all living things and appreciate that. And don't forget yourself as well. You know, an interesting part of our consciousness is psychic ability. And many of people, of course, have these psychic gifts in one way or another. There's a variety of ways that people can be psychic. And we're going to now change our direction a little bit. We're going to be talking with our guest, Reverend Vicki Hunter. She's going to be talking about children with psychic gifts, what parents can do. And just a little background on Vicki. She has worked as a clairvoyant for 40 years. She's a writer, author. She's a Metaphysics Institute doctoral candidate. And she teaches her own program called Principles for Natural Laws and Education. Vicki will discuss recommendations right now and offer support for parents. Vicki, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Doug, and it's a pleasure to be here. I really enjoyed listening to your show. I want to say to you and to others who may be in with the show today that this is timely. Your show is timely. Your word is timely. We're all seeking the answers that have been speaking to us for a very long time and what's in the self. What about me? And the real what about me is what is my truth. And everybody's seeking that. So I really appreciate everything you've been saying today.
Well, thank you. And, of course, you have a lot of good things to offer as well. And I think that your topic is especially poignant on children. I didn't have that same experience. I mean, I just wasn't one of those psychically gifted children. So I didn't have that issue. But you know what? I've talked to a lot of people who grew up that way and who grew up feeling different, feeling left out in many ways, feeling outside the peer group.
Well, I think all children have some kind, and maybe you don't recall it. Maybe.
Well, I felt different because I was of a funky religion, but not for psychic stuff.
But you had your own mind. You had your own thought. You had your own experiences, and perhaps they aren't what we would coin as psychic by nature, but you have a sensitivity. And every child has their own kinds of sensitivity. I think that it's very common for us to refer to children having imaginary friends.
Yeah.
Everyone has kind of your imaginary or invisible friends. And the adult world thinks that's kind of fun. You know, it's a fun thing, but very often they don't stop to think that maybe that's a real experience for the child.
Right.
So I think every child has something. And it's just we're all different, we're all individuals, and it just takes different forms. I've had my own experiences, certainly as a child. I have my own children, grandchildren, and hundreds of people over the years who have asked, my child is having this experience, what do I do? The first and foremost thing, again, I come from the approach that it's perfectly natural, perfectly normal to have some kind of experience that the adult world doesn't have an ordinary frame for. So that's really critical to accept that we don't know the answers to everything and we don't understand everything. We have to be aware. As you were speaking earlier in the show, we can all open our minds to be more aware. And hopefully not impose some of our own beliefs just because we don't understand them.
Good point.
So just because I didn't have that experience doesn't mean it isn't real to who's having it. I have often, honestly, looked at other psychics, you know, popular or not, and saying, geez, how come I can't do that? You know, but I have my own. And this is what happens when you grow into your own individuality, is that you learn in your own uniqueness, that you have your own gifts, your own thing to bring to the table, so to speak. Children are, as a friend used to coin the phrase, hot off the cosmic plane. You know, they don't have the prejudices that the adult world has grown into. So it's in a trust, a naivete, if you will, or
innocence.
Absolute purity and the wonderment. And we've coached that wonderment, you know, whether it's through Disney, fairies and a magical world. And, you know, isn't it funny that we all love that so much as mm-hmm. adults? We love that. But we do it precariously through our children. We like to think that we're adult and mature, but there is a wonderment. You know, you talked earlier about this divine energy. That's the wonderment. There is this something, this interconnectedness, and there is that wonderment of life. And I'm always in awe. And I think the day that I'm no longer in awe of experience is the day I kind of go numb and might as well be dead. I mean, that's the extraordinary part of life that keeps us going. We're always interested. At least we hope we are.
Yes.
Children, I can tell you a very recent experience, and I don't think I'm honest. My granddaughter was at the age of 3 talking about when she was big before and about these other people. And she was sharing day after day after day, and it kept expanding, how when she was in a bigger body with her friends and these things happened. Of course, some of it was a little fearful for her. And my daughter and I talked about this, and we could explore it with her in a good way, with my granddaughter in a good way, that whatever needed to be released was released, but also the acknowledgement of, well, you're here now. And we can tell those people to go away because you're here now. You're safe, and we love you, and you're okay here. And you know that satisfied everything that she needed to know, and she was able to set that aside. Where did that come from? We have no idea. That's not the point. We don't need to know. She was, certainly my translation of it, is a past life memory that came forward. Other people might say that's imagination, watching too much TV. My granddaughter doesn't watch TV. So it's a, we can guess at a lot of reasons. The thing is, we don't have to know an answer. We only need to go with the experience.
Good point.
My second daughter, when she was a child, had a horrendous fear of fire. Because I have a background and training in hypnosis, I was able to work with her on this, where we would do meditations, directed meditations, and whatever she needed to, because it's not up to me to tell her what to do, I would just guide her through what she needed to release by way of fear. Where did that fear come from? It certainly wasn't anything in this lifetime. So over time and over years, she was able to release that. But very interesting, whenever we would do a meditation and I'd ask her, where are you in your mind? She was relating stories of being tied up, people on horseback riding around in a circle, and they lit a fire.
Mm.
So where does that come from? I don't know. The only thing I could do is guide her through it that she was safe and comfortable and loved to be in the here now. This is the most critical thing about any of these psychic experiences, to impart to the child that you're in the here now. Let whatever is coming, let it come forward. Let it be heard. I'm not a fan of digging around for stuff, you know, because we're imposing our idea. You dig around for past lives, then it can be...
Well, you're leading the witness, so to speak.
Absolutely. I prefer to deal with things as they arise. Very interesting that the most common thing that people talk to me about is their children seeing spirits. That could be late grandma, you know, could be, you know, another relative, because that's usually how the parent relates to, that must be. But from the imaginary friends, which is a little bit different than seeing a spirit or somebody's in the room. A child can be playing with their toys and talking to a friend, but when they say, and they have a description of somebody, and then the parent relates, oh, geez, that sounds like grandma. Very often there's, because I believe in that mid-world, that other world, there are spirits who do come and do visit. And it's easier, much easier to get through to kids than it is to us. So
well, how are imaginary friends different? Could children be seeing a spirit, maybe even the spirit of somebody who previously lived in the home, and call that an imaginary friend? And it could even be a child spirit.
Absolutely. I've seen that many, many times. But it could also be in their subconscious, a higher conscious state.
Mm-hmm.
Something they relate to from a past life that they bring forward in their consciousness in this life. Not necessarily an actual grounded spirit that is their playmate, so to speak. It can be any number of things. That's why I don't like to, until I know more information about the experience, I don't like to say, oh, that must be this, or it must be that. The imaginary friend could very well be a grounded spirit. It can also be a memory that the child has brought forward from another time and place that they feel comfortable with. It could also be an energy source, because there are other dimensions of time, space, and energy sources.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what I try to impart to parents. It doesn't matter. It only matters that we don't impose ourselves to say it's wrong, that that's not right. Now, if there's something that's causing discomfort for the child, if they're frightened, then I take the next step of calling it, I just call that empowerment. You must empower the child. Sometimes kids get scared because, you know, by the environment, we're not necessarily encouraged to, did you see spirits today? So when a child does have an unusual experience, they get scared. Well, I very often encourage the dialogue first. Well, what did that spirit want? I don't know. Did they talk to you? No. Well, maybe you want to ask them what they like. Why are they here? It generally allows a comfort because I'm validating the experience. I'm not poo-pooing it. I'm just asking what the feelings are. And I'm relating that that's your individual experience. I can't see them, but you can, obviously, and maybe just have a dialogue. If the child is continually afraid, then I say it's fair to tell them to go away. Now, at this point, this is usually when I tell parents, the things that you do not allow a child to do in their day life, such as use profanities, give them permission to use that in that altered state or their dream time, like the boogeyman, you know, or somebody chasing them or bothering them. Then use the profanity, and it empowers the child in a way that they don't have or ordinarily wouldn't have in the daytime. And it's being able to call upon their own mind, their own individual energy, and it supports all of those things. But it keeps that line of communication, that opening with what you coined earlier as that divine energy. It keeps that open, even if we don't understand it, because we don't have to.
And there's a lot of value in empowering the child. I mean, there's a lot of value in empowering adults, and that's where it starts, is empowering your children. And I appreciate what you said just a few minutes ago when you essentially establish that boundary with spirits, and they have to comply. I mean,
yes.
You know, if they have to comply. So, good
absolutely.
Point.
You know, there's that old adage, you know, that's as above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
Spirits operate in much the same way as people. And I say, if we, you know, let's say you want help and you're going to call upon some higher power for help or your spirits for help. They can't help you unless you ask them and you give them permission. The same way that between people, I can't expect you to help me unless I ask, and you know what that is. So we have to have that same dynamic. If you are stepping, and we talked recently about boundaries, if you've overstepped your boundaries and my boundaries, then I have to say, these are my boundaries. And you can say the same thing in spirits. Look, you're overstepping your boundaries, my boundaries. Like, I don't mind you being here, but don't make so much noise.
You know?
It's like, I got to sleep here. And so you can tell them to go away. Yeah, there's certain energies that you do not want there. I absolutely believe that in the event of a negative energy, it must have something to attach to. If you have fear, it will attach to fear. Empowerment releases fear. And you must have that. It's an absolute. To know your own mind, to be empowered to have your own mind, and to choose what you want in your life, whether it's in the physical world or that other dimension, many other dimensions, in that spiritual world. You know, we have to be able to say no, yes, whatever we want to impart. So that it's really critical that we explore these things in a good and positive way. We must.
Good points. You know, and we need to empower our children in all ways, too. And it goes back to honoring the divine energy in people. We honor the divine energy in our children by letting them grow, at times letting them stumble and pick themselves up and teaching them how, being their guides and helping them to grow up to be well-balanced, stable adults who can stand on their own 2 feet. But it goes with treating children properly and honoring that energy within them. And that innocence you speak about is a beautiful thing with a child. And unfortunately, with some children, they lose that innocence by the inappropriate behavior of adults, including physical abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse even. You know,
well, one thing, I will say this to you as a grandmother. I look back, and I like to believe I was available for my children. But what I wasn't always was emotionally available. And I think the absence of our emotional attention is just as damaging as any other kind of abuses that, you know, we would normally say that's an abuse. But there's an availability, and this is, of course, grandmadom, as I call it. You know, we are more emotionally available because as we grow older, that doesn't mean to say we can't be when they're young. And we have to remember life through the eyes of the child. Absolutely. Like, they are formulating their belief systems. They are responding and reacting according to stimuli. And this is why, you know, you got to remember this simple point. Children mimic their environment. That doesn't take away from individuality, but they are formulating themselves. So if we're behaving in a certain way, they're going to take that on. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Really, I think, until about the age of 9, children are like sponges. In generalized psychology, they say that a child does not know marginalization until about the age of 4. And what that means to say is they don't understand the differences between each other, you know, all of us. It's kind of like so-and-so has 3 TVs and we only have 1. They don't really recognize those things until they get to be about 4 or 5. Everybody's the same. Everything is the same. So a child is like a sponge. They're just absorbing everything. There is a lot to be said for spiritual memory, because I will say this to you, that even as a child, 3, 4, 5 years old, I saw the world a little bit differently. Of course, I had my whole world of, you know, what they called imaginary friends, and I had dialogue with them. So I would look around the world and I'd say, some of these things in this world just isn't right. And it's not about knowing how or why it's not right. I just knew it wasn't right. The way some people behave, it's just not right. But as I got a little bit older, even with my little friends, they started putting away their imaginary friends, usually about the time we go to grade school, because we've got our minds and other things. Mine never went away. But I didn't know for a long time that other people put theirs away. So I just keep talking. So then there's, I got marginalized in a little bit of a different way also. And I had to slowly see that my world had to become more secret because it wasn't accepted the way I was living it. So that caused me to see the world as being a little bit different again, layer upon layer upon layer. But I still have to behave according to what's taught to me. And then our wiring kind of gets all messed up too, because it's bound to happen. We're stimulated, and we will go by the example set by others around us, particularly the parents and teachers.
So to kind of sum it up now, for parents who have children who might be having these experiences, in a nutshell, what can they do? Just to sum up everything you've kind of already said.
Go with the experience. Ask questions. Don't impose your judgment. Particularly, don't start assuming that your child could be the reincarnation of somebody famous. That's the big disclaimer I put on there, because they have certain abilities. Certainly to continue to research, do some reading, ask a friend, share other experiences. But above all else, permit the comfort that a child can evolve to experience what they're learning or remembering in their life, that we don't put it away. We want the intuition to continue. We want that to keep expanding. We all have really good sensory perceptions if we listen to them. But that comes with awareness. So encourage that. I absolutely encourage it. But don't impose to have your child be more than they are. Let the child guide you.
Some excellent information on that topic, and very appropriate and relevant to folks who are having those issues. Thank you, Vicki, for joining us today. And
thank you very much
for your thoughts. And we appreciate everybody joining us. Before we leave, real quick, take a moment, send some positive energy to those who you know who might be having a hard time, and just send it, and send some to yourself too. Next week, we're going to be talking about the topic, Where is Your Mind? Evidence for Non-Locality. We're going to talk about Principle of Belief number 6. We'll discuss quantum entanglement and consciousness and offer some compelling evidence that we are all connected. It's kind of amazing, so you want to join us. If you like what you're hearing, I invite you to join the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. You can find us on the web at mchschurch.org. Also, if you'd like to learn more about metaphysics and even get your PhD degree in metaphysics, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. That wraps up this week's program. This is Doug Kelly encouraging you to listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Have a great week.
This has been Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly. To learn more about the concepts presented in this program, visit mchschurch.com. To take a metaphysics course or to get your metaphysics degree, visit metaphysicsinstitute.com.
Power of the Spirit is a production of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science.